Simon Tzadi Aleph. Then Bas Becholov Shen is Arvu. Okay, we're going to have a lot of Simonim from now on. Basically, almost all the Simonim from now on are about the practicalities of if you have some interaction, some touching between meat and milk, how much does the taste of the meat penetrate the milk, or the taste of the milk penetrate the meat, etc. So in Simon Tzadi Aleph we see Basar Gvina Shenagu Zebazeh. Right, this is the Mishnah in Kol Basar. Right, it says Sorer Adam Basar Gvina Mepachas Achas. You're allowed to put meat and cheese into one sack as long as they don't touch. And the Gemara says, and if they do touch, what's the big deal? They're cold, right? The taste doesn't transfer if they're cold. And there says, yeah, you're right. They don't need, they don't become treif if they touch, right? They don't need to be peeled. You don't need to throw anything out. But, you know, they would still need to be rinsed. And this seems to be very common sense. If cold meat touches cold milk, there's no blia, the taste doesn't get absorbed without heat, but some schmutz of the meat still rubs off on the cheese still rubs off on the meat, and it's not nivla inside, but it's still on the surface, so you have to wash it to clean it. And that's what it says in the Shulchan Aruch, basar v'gvina shenagu zebazeh mutarim elish tzarch la'diach makom nigi yasam. You just have to wash them where they touch. This is the mystery, you're allowed to put them, you're allowed to wrap them up in one sack, and we don't worry that maybe you'll jostle it and they'll move around and touch each other. No, if you wrap them up not touching each other, we assume that that will be okay. Do you have a question? Okay. there's a few details that come up here in the post-gim. Two details that come up here is, number one, the discussion of the first shachs of Katan Aleph. Is there always even any schmutz rubbing off that would require rinsing? So says the Shachs of Katan Aleph that the Bach writes that only if one of them is moist. Lach here doesn't mean liquid, it means moist. But if they're both dry, if you have a dry piece of meat and a dry piece of cheese, then even the schmutz doesn't rub off and they don't even need to be rinsed. And here the later Achronim give some caveats to this kula. Rabbi Akiva Eger, and the first Rabbi Akiva Eger points out, it's mefurish later on in our sif, no two ways about it, that if they're salted, then you need to rinse them even if they're dry. Okay, you have to figure exactly why. You know, maybe because some of the salt will rub off, but the later Achronim quote in the Pesachei Tshuvos of Katan Aleph, who quotes from the Chavos Das, and the Prima Gadim says that this is one of the properties that I don't fully understand based on my limited knowledge of chemistry. Maybe some with more knowledge of chemistry would understand better. But we find many places in Hilchos Basar B'Chalav that a Dover Charif has the power to create more of a transfer or blia or etc., which I admit I don't fully understand, but we'll try to tackle a little. So says the Pesachei Tshuva here, basically he makes a broader exception to the Shachs Kula. If it's salted or charif, sharp, sharp is like very peppery or garlicky or something like that, then even if it's dry, you still need to rinse it off. Somehow the sharpness will at least get some of the schmutz of the other thing to cling to it. Okay, so I'm not sure I totally understand from modern chemistry, but l'maisa, we assume, like those achronim quoted in the beginning of the Pesachei Tshuvos of Katan Aleph, that, bottom line, if two things touch each other, they need to be, milk and flesh, you touch each other, they need to be rinsed. If they're both dry, they don't need to be rinsed. But if they're both dry and salty or spicy, sharp, then they do need to be rinsed. Okay, that's the bottom line, halacha lit maisa.
Who is the second person? The charif point?
The Pesachei Tshuvos of Katan Aleph quoted from the Prima Gadim and the Chavos Das. The now, the other discussion of the Pesachei Tshuva here in the first Pesachei Tshuva is, to what extent is this a real, lechora, this is based on metzius. If two things touch each other, some of the schmutz of one rubs off on the other, you know, depending on the circumstances. The question is that really a halachically significant cheftza? That it really is a chefto basar b'chalav, or no, really that's totally insignificant. It's just a chum rabbi alma midrabanan that we have to be choshish for it. Where this comes across is the big discussion, because the chuvah is cut in aleph. Well, actually, there are two big discussions here. Let's start with the first one. Sorry, bracket that. Let's go to the first one. What does rinsing mean? Right, my cheese touched my meat. Right, I know some guy accidentally made a deli sandwich. Right, deli sandwich for goyim includes cheese, obviously, although it's not a good deli sandwich. So I take the cheese off the deli, and I have to rinse them. Right, so what does rinsing mean? Does rinsing mean just soaking in water or pouring water on them? Or does rinsing mean scrubbing, what we call shif-shif? Okay, nowadays, generally, our hygienic standards are much higher than they were in the old days, and our intuition seems to be the more machra end of the spectrum, but not so pashut. The Pesrei Tshuva here says that rinsing means just rinsing without scrubbing. It says, do you ever need scrubbing? So here he quotes from the from the Prima Gadim that, but if something is fatty, then there's more schmutz, and then you need scrubbing. So it's hard to get rid of fatty residue. That means it needs more scrubbing. And the Chavuzda says, nope, only if you cut something with a knife, where you have something called duchka de sakina, pressure with a knife, and it's fatty, you need scrubbing. Otherwise, you do not need scrubbing. And he quotes likewise from the base of Ephraim, who holds like the Chavuzda, and then he makes another chiluk. He says, but if you have fat that's dissolved in water, then it needs more. Then it needs more scrubbing. Kitzer, if you ask here, what about what's the definition of hadacha? One shita is the prima gadim. He says only shamein needs shif-shaf. Otherwise, you just rinse it. The second shita he quotes here, and the prima gadim and the base of Ephraim, I believe. The base of Ephraim was like the Chavuzdas. Sorry, Prima Gadim. The second opinion was the Chavuzdas and the base of Ephraim, who say only shamei with duchka disakina need shif shuf. Rinsing is enough. The only time you need.
If the Prima Gadim would say, in my case, the cheese and the deli meat's probably pretty fatty, so it would need scrubbing. He says, no, only if you cut it with a knife and had a lot of pressure, you need scrubbing. Otherwise, rinsing is good enough. There is a third, more machmir shita. The Rabbi Akiva Eger, in the second Rabbi Akiva Eger, quotes from the Ra'ah, who says shnei minei ochlin shenagu b'zevazeh? He says, yeah, you need to rinse. If you put something in a kli, milk in a flesh kli, but if two pieces of food touch each other, aser b'chol inyan, it is always aser to let two pieces of food touch each other. He doesn't explain why, but if you look in the right inside, he says because when two pieces of food touch each other, they need shif-shuf gadol. They need a lot of scrubbing. So if two pieces of food touch each other, get schmutz on each other, they need a lot of scrubbing. And therefore, you should never let it happen, because who says you're going to remember to scrub it afterwards? And likewise, if you... Can I just have a volunteer to give out this one sheet? If you look in the Shut Rivash on the bottom of the sheet, the Shut Rivash has a sheet that he says, I'll just read the underlined part of the Shut Rivash. Says the Shut Rivash, Shrichem Hadacha, Verotza Lomer im Shifshuf Bo. It needs rinsing. Rinsing means with scrubbing. Sheyishav Shifim Biyadim, that you scrub it with your hands. Distam Hadacha Kachi, Stam Hadacha means scrubbing. Okay, that's pretty clear. He thinks Stam Hadacha and Shas means scrubbing. The Yad Yehuda here, where I've mentioned a few times before, we have it downstairs on the shelf, quotes from this Rivash and wants to be Machir, that Stam Hadacha means Shifshuf against all these other Achronim. So here you have the Yad Yehuda Alpi the Rivash, and you also, this is a sheet of the Ra'ah. He's not quoted fully Rabbi Akiva Eger. He doesn't say what the Svar of the Ra'ah is, just that the Ra'ah says you shouldn't let milk and cheese and meat touch each other at all.
But if you look inside, it says, because they would need to be scrubbed, and mestamer, you're not going to scrub them. So they say that you always need shifshuf. You should always scrub it well. And in the Badei Shulchan here, who always likes to be machber, as we know, he is machber like the Yad Yehuda quoting Shribi Vash against all these achronim, that when it says rinse, hadacha washing, it always means with scrubbing. Okay, nearer that nowadays that we're used to scrubbing things, we're running water, we have sponges, we have all kinds of things, nearer that it's definitely proper to be machmir, like the Rivash. And even though it's not quoted on the daf, it's not any of the opinions of the Pesach Tshuva, it's not any of the most famous authoritative achronim, nearer to be machmir this way, especially since nowadays in our hygienic standards, that's a very easy thing to do. But seeing that in this case, we can be machmer like the Badei HaShulchan and always scrub meat that touches milk, meat that touches cheese, or cheese that touches meat. It's always better to be on the safe side, and it's easy for us to scrub nowadays. Yes, Betzalel.
We're talking about the Chamer of Shamein. Is that meaning Shamein being a subcategory of Lach, or just Lach being a sub Lach as opposed to Maluach and Harif? I mean, if it's totally dry, it doesn't need any hadacha whatsoever.
Right.
I'm saying, amongst things...
But if it's moist and fatty, then it needs shifshuf.
Fatty is a specific type of moist.
Yeah.
I mean, if it's moist through, like, water, then it doesn't need shifshuf.
A lot of things are moist, but they're not fatty. I don't know, ice pop is moist,
yeah,
but doesn't have any fat content.
And, in cases where you don't need hadacha, or you wouldn't need shifshuf or whatever, if you can, like, see... remnant.
Then you have to use your common sense.
What do you mean?
Then if you see something, then you should clean it.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay.
Meaning you make her a din, or
I think make her a din. These are rules of thumb. This is all else being equal.
Okay.
The end of the Pesach Yeshivas Katan Aleph quotes a big machlokes. What about is this idea of hadacha l'chachila or b'diavad? Again, it's probably based on mitzias. There is some residue, some minute amount of residue, but is that halachically significant, even by the evidence, that just now a chum, it's really halachically insignificant, it's just a chumr l'chachila. So is this whole se'if l'chachila, or is it by the evid? The Taz starts this discussion on the next se'if. The next se'if says, kol midi d'bo yadacha, anything that would need to be rinsed, like putting your kosher meat cold on a cold treif plate, meaning whatever two things, that's clear in the Mishnah. You can put meat and cheese in one knapsack, as long as they don't touch. But you can't let them touch. Why not say, I'll let them touch and then rinse them? So the diuk is that no, it's also to let it touch, because you might forget to rinse it. That's only true of cooked meat that you don't normally rinse. Something which you always rinse, like raw meat, which they would always rinse before cooking it. I don't know if we still do that nowadays. I have to ask my wife. But anything which you always rinse before eating, so then you're allowed to let it touch, trafe, etc., because you know you're going to rinse it. But like ready-to-eat food that you eat without rinsing, so let's say in your house, I don't know, you always rinse the cucumbers before you eat them because they come dirty from the supermarket. So then you can put the cucumber, let it touch something treif, or let it touch something milchic when you're going to eat it with meat, or let it touch something flesh, you're going to eat it with milk because you know you're going to rinse it. But let's say in your house you don't always rinse the tomatoes before you eat them, then you can't let them touch anything treif or the wrong type of thing because we're afraid you might forget and eat it without rinsing. Straightforward enough, very reasonable. The Taz here asks the Kasha. He says we have a general principle. The Taz likes to call this principle, but it's not only the Taz's principle. We don't make a gzera, seem to have a general principle. We only make a gzera, don't do X because it might lead to Y. Only if Y is asur b'dievet. If Y is only an asur l'chachila, then we don't need to make a gzera. Don't do X because you might come to Y. Because Y is only asur l'chachila. Like, it's not the end of the world if you come to Y, right? Nothing terrible happened. So he says, but it's only l'chachila to rinse it. It's not treif b'dievet if you don't rinse it. This is only chomer l'chachila. That's the assumption of this taz. This v'katan aleph. This whole din of hadacha is only l'chachila. It's not ma'akeh b'dievet. So, for example, if my cheese touched my meat and I ate it without rinsing, it would be kosher b'dievet. I haven't eaten treif. Just l'chachila, I should rinse it. Therefore, he says it makes no sense. How can you say don't let it touch because you might forget to rinse it and eat it? It'll still be kosher b'dievet. Wouldn't it be such a big aveira if you ate it without rinsing it? Okay. And he answers that that you're right. Well, he's yes.
Meaning, it's even if you don't rinse it, it's not awesome.
Correct. That's the Chiddush of the Taz, which a lot of the Achronim. Now, where does he get that from? It doesn't say that anywhere in the Shulchan Aruch, does it? I don't think it says that anywhere in the Shulchan Aruch. Does it, Ari? No, but he assumes that's true. Okay, why does he assume that's true? Okay, maybe it's a kol shekein from Sif Dalid, depending on how you interpret the opinion of the Mechaber and Sif Dalid. But
let's just ask this problem question, right? How about achila b'li hadacha? Clearly, it's also l'kapila, right? If the Gemara says you have to rinse it, then it's also l'kapila to eat it without rinsing it.
The question is it treif b'dievet or not? Right? If the cheese touched the meat and got some meat schmutz on it and I ate it without rinsing, is that significant enough to be considered as I ate basar b'chalav? Or no, I just didn't do l'chachila, but what I ate was kosher.
They're still both cold?
They're still both cold. Right. Here we have naga, gevina, sonenes, b'basar tzonin. Right? V'achal b'li hadacha, right? Two cold things touch each other, and they got a tiny bit of schmutz. They didn't rinse it off. So, what is the din? Sorry. The Taz assumes that it's mutter b'di'eved, and I haven't eaten treif. Mutter b'di'eved, I haven't eaten treif. That also seems to be the assumption of the Toras Chatas. In the Taz of Katan Beis, he quotes the Marshal, who's very, very upset. The Marshal is very upset. How come all the people, when they go on trips, they would eat herring, pickled herring, salted herring, right? That's our kind of herring, right? He wasn't choshish for the kashrus and the herring. Right? In the old days, a lot more things were kosher without a hashgacha than they are nowadays because they made things naturally and they didn't have any surprise ingredients. So he knew that the herring was kosher everywhere. But the problem is they would eat the herring in the plates of the goyim. Says, treif plates, how can you do that? You're supposed to rinse the herring and they eat without rinsing. And he says, not only that, they also eat pickles. The pickles are all kosher. They would eat pickles in those days. In the plates of the goyim, and he said it's a problem because the pickles need to be rinsed before you eat them, and not only that, they would also eat the pickle juice, the brine. The brine also needs to be rinsed before you eat it. And if you eat the brine, and you can't actually rinse the brine, right? If you eat the brine that way, then it should just all be treif, because it has a little treif schmutz in it, and you can't even rinse it. Right? So these people are eating treif. So the Marshal accused people of eating treif. He assumed that it was a problem, even b'dievet. And what did the Ramah say back to him? The Tazir quotes in the Toras Chatas. The Toras Chatas says, Shasat chakon shesachtim yisagoy k'dievet domi ad kam l'shono, says the Ramah. He thinks we should be machbar everything with achila, but everything's mutter b'dievet. And says the Ramah, there's a rule in halacha, shasat chak k'dievet domi. Whenever you're stuck with shasat chak, then even though you're doing something with achila, that counts as b'dievet. Okay, what's called a shasat chak, where you can assume it's called b'dievet and b'mekel, and what isn't, the devil's really in the details here. In any particular case, everyone will have their own hashgaf and their own perspective, etc. But, says the Ramah, if you're traveling, you're staying in a goyish inn, that's a shasat chak, and now you can rely on anything that's mutter b'dievet you can rely on, because otherwise what are you going to eat in the goyish inn? I guess they didn't have like airline meals then. So says the Ramah, it's okay. What they do is okay because since the Shasat Chak, we treat it like B'dievet, and B'dievet, it's okay. So the Ramah seems to assume that really B'dievet, this is all, even without rinsing it, it's all kosher. Now, the Ramah is talking about a slightly different case than this, but that's at least what he sounds like. The Ramah is not talking about cheese touching meat. He's talking about putting your food on a goyish plate, which is complicated for its own reasons. But it definitely sounds like
So we add the Torah Skatas. The Torah Skatas is Ramah. Why don't you take it off the shelf once and look at it? It's before he wrote the Ramah. The Shulchan Aruch, he wrote a book of all the halachos of Kashrus called the Torah Skatas.
But did they in general line up with each other?
In general, but with many, many... In general, in the general Mahalach. But when it comes to the specific details, there's often steers between them. And sometimes you can miyash the steers, and more often than not, you can't. So you shouldn't expect the Ramah and the Shulchan Aruch and the Torah Skatas to always match. They should always match in their general Mahalach. But in terms of how to paskin on the details, he usually often changes his mind between one and the other. So, like, the Achronim don't assume that it should always match. However, the Maharshal was of the assumption that, no, it's also the Evid. It's treif. If you eat it without klipa, then it is treif. And this has to do with some of the nafkaminas, which are discussed in the Pesach Tshuva at the end of Sivkat and Aleph. Says the Pesach Tshuva, im nimlach o nitzle b'li hadacha. Shenivla mashu shalpanov kedei klipa. Filoach imotar below klipa, he quotes from the... well, what's the first thing he says? V'dovardi efshar klal b'adachgon mayim, ayin later on. Sivkat and Beis. And what does he say here? Sorry. The two kulas from the Chavos Das. What are the two kulas? Number one, what about a liquid? Right? That was the case of the pickle juice, where you can't rinse it off from the schmutz. So what's the din if you can't rinse off the liquid from the... if you can't rinse off the liquid from the schmutz? So the... says the Chavos Das, says the Maharshal, it's all usur. So let's say milk... Let's say you have milk and not cheese that touches the meat and gets the schmutz, and you can't actually rinse the schmutz off the milk, so it's all usser. Or in the Marshal's case, pickle juice that was on the goyish kli and got the schmutz from the goyish kli is all usser. Big chumrah of the Marshal, says the Chavos Das, and the Ramah and the Torah Skatas, right, quoted in the Taz, mutter. And the Chavos Das actually says he thinks there are two reasons why it's mutter. Chavos Das thinks there are two reasons why it's mutter. Because it's mutter b'di'eved. And what other reason might you say why it's mutter? If, let's say you have a liquid, right? You take your kosher liquid and you put it in a treif clean, it gets a little schmutz, or milchic liquid, it touches the meat, gets a little schmutz, and you can't rinse it. Why might you say it's mutter? Besides the fact, maybe the whole thing is mutter. Maybe there's only chomer l'chachila in it, b'di'eved, we don't worry about schmutz. Because bitl b'shishim, how much schmutz could have come onto it? A tiny bit of schmutz, and it should be bitl b'shishim. That's what Chavos Das also says, and also because of bitl b'shishim. The second Pesach Tshuva, you can quote the Chavos Das says, and did the Marshal also know bitl b'shishim? Says, well, the Marshal probably also knows it's bitl b'shishim. He just meant if the guy did it on purpose, there's a rule. If you do bitl on purpose, then you can't eat it afterwards. Okay, the second case that comes up in the Pesach Tshuva of Katan Aleph is, what about if it was nimlach o nitzle b'li hadocha? Your meat touched cheese, and then you salted it or roasted it without rinsing it. So now the little schmutz that's on it when you salt it goes inside it. The little schmutz that's on it when you roast it goes inside it, because the salt or the heat makes any schmutz on the surface go inside. So now what do you do? It's too late to rinse it. It's also another case where you could have rinsed it, but now it's too late to rinse it because you already salted it or broiled it, and when you do that, it makes the tam go inside. So here also says the Chavos Das, in the first Pesach Tshuva, says the Chavos Das, mutter. Says the Chavos Das, mutter. Yes.
The Marshal in red number one contradicts the end of Sif Dalet, right? Where it says Menachlu Zel tells
us. The Marshal quoted by the Taz there rejects Sifdalit.
Oh, okay.
So he's okay. He's Lashitasi.
Okay.
Okay, but good point.
Anyway, the Chavos Das says it's mutter here also because, okay, L'chadchila should have rinsed it, but b'di'evet, if you salted or roasted it without rinsing and then that little schmutz got driven inside, we ignore it because that schmutz is not really significant. The truth is, in the Sefer Yad Yehuda here, he says also there could be another reason to be makel on this. Maybe because there's a rule that a tiny amount of something doesn't penetrate into something even with heat. But l'maisa, halach l'maisa, it seems that the majority poskim assume, like the tzad, that it is mutter b'di'evet. Chavos Das really goes to town. He assumes very seriously that it's mutter b'di'evet. The mainstream poskim assume that this din of hadachas din l'chachila b'di'evet. It's not actually treif if you eat it without rinsing because that little schmutz is not halachically significant. So therefore, obviously, we should try the chachila to be machmer because we're the chachila yidden. But b'di'evet, if you can't rinse it, like it's a liquid or it became liquefied or it became cooked or roasted or broiled in a way that, you know, the tamga, that whatever's in the surface got mixed in, then it would still be kosher. Now that's our psak. Okay, so much for Sif Aleph and the beginning of Sif Beis. If there's any other questions, so we learned the rule of cold things that touch each other to eat hadacha. We learned when they don't, dry things that are neither salty nor sharp. We learned whether you need to scrub, and we try to be machber on that. And we learned what happens b'di'evet. Yes.
Is it the requirement of hadacha categorical, or like just because there's schmutz there? Meaning, like, if you were to check, and like you trusted yourself to check.
Yeah, I think we assume you can't trust yourself to check.
But you are saying it is not categorical. It's just that we don't trust checking.
Correct. Like, let's say you had a scientific test. I think you could rely on it. But it would be easier to just rinse it.
Do we have a terrorist for the Taz? The question of why we're math.
Oh, sorry, I forgot. Yes, so he in the end ends up saying that it's actually not a rule that we don't make a gzera atu something that's much of the effort. He said the rule is we don't make a gzera atu something that's a suffix usser, isser, that's much of the effort. But atu a vadai isser l'chachil, that's much of the effort, we do make a gzera. That's his answer. So the Taz's answer here, you could just ask, you know, lama gozrim shema lo viyadiyach. So, according to the Maharshal, it's very easy. Because if he didn't rinse, it would be treif. And says the Taz, he makes a chiddush, because gozrin gezeira atu iser lechatchila Vadai below atu iser lechatchila mitam safek. And basically he says, if you look at the cases where we don't make exera atu something to be evident, that means that there might or might not have an iser. You're just supposed to check, and you might not check, and then you can make it to be evident. Okay, we're not gozer. Because maybe there's no iser anywhere. Here, but vadai, there's an iser lechatchila to eat without rinsing. And therefore we make exera. He's just more machmer in the rules of Xeris. Thank you, Oren. Okay, now, the action really starts with the Ramah in Sif Beis. Because the Ramah in Sif Beis points out a stira, there's a few stiras here, we'll just mention like sort of the main stira, between the Bala Itter here and the Orchas Chaim. Between the Bala Itter here and the Orchas Chaim. And based on the Gemara in Hilchas Pesach. And why is that a valid stira? Because both of them are quoted by the Torah. Therefore, they're supposed to be able to drive and not be a stira to one another. That's why the Darkei Moshe is very concerned that it was a stira. So what's the stira? The stira is, how does Sif Aleph apply to Caleb? What about Naga Bikli Isser? Or let's be very careful. Be very meduyak about how we say naga ma'achal heter so name bikli iser so name. Right? Basically, you put cold kosher food in a cold treif kli. right? This is right. You go to this is the issue that comes up when you go to people's houses all the time. I mean, it could also come from other places. But you go to your non-firm relative or friend's house, right? You make sure, obviously, you eat only kosher food. But do you have to use disposable kelim? So the so this is the big question. So the Gemara does not relate to this explicitly. The Gemara doesn't tell you explicitly what the rules are here. There are some cases that, no case is just like this. It's a question of shefting with a treif knife, that's different, because that's pressure of the knife, and it's also a little hot, and it's not really discussed in the knives are discussed in the Gemara. Treif knife, or milk knife, fleshic knife, but this case of just putting things in the kelim is not discussed in the Gemara. So, now, it wouldn't make a treif. Worst case scenario, you'd have to rinse it. Question is, do you have to wash it, or do you not have to wash it? Right, so if I don't know, you serve me hard-boiled eggs in a treif plate, do I have to wash it or not? Or the place when I was a kid called Friendly's, they still have that?
Yeah.
I'm not posking anything because, without getting into detail, since I was a kid, a number of years have passed. Without specifying. But in my days, it was, I never ate at Friendly's. I wasn't cool when I was a kid. But in my days, it was well known, I hope it was true, that the ice cream at Friendly's was kosher. I don't know, is that still something that people... Okay, so the stomach was true then, it's true now, although I never checked it out myself. But the ice cream at Friendly's was kosher. So you could go to Friendly's and get the ice cream. The question is, what about the Kalen Friendly's? Could you get the ice cream with a friendly spoon, with the Friendly's, you know, whatever their bowls or whatever were made of? Or do you have to get in disposable Kalen? That was a big machlokas when I was a kid. I don't know what people do nowadays. But that's the same question. That's also, well, they unless the scooper they only use for the ice cream, maybe. I mean, there's a lot of shilas about these things. How do they wash the scooper, etc. Okay, but let's assume that, what's the halacha? So, what does the Baal Ha'itr say here, which is just quoting the Shulchan Aruch? This Shulchan Aruch, Sif Beis, the Mechaber Sif Beis, was the Baal Ha'itr. What did the Baal Ha'itr say? His first principle is really unremarkable. It was just, any time two things touch and you would need to rinse them, don't let them touch the chachila, because you might forget to rinse them and eat them anyway. That's just straight out of the Gemara. The Gemara says you can put meat and cheese in a sack as long as they don't touch each other. Why can't they touch each other? Because then you would have to rinse them. So he just adds a few words to the Gemara, and therefore don't let them touch, because you might forget to rinse them. It didn't say that before, so the Gemara, that's a push-up shot of the Gemara. That's not the Chiddush the Baal Ha'itr. That's the Pashup shot in the Gemara. The Chiddush the Baal Ha'itr is that the Gemara is talking about two foods, meat and cheese. The Baal Ha'itr is talking about a food in a kli. That's his case. Putting kosher meat in a treif dish. And then he says, well, you need to rinse it. Therefore, don't put kosher meat in a treif dish because you might forget to rinse it, unless it's raw meat when you're going to rinse it anyway, depending on everyone's minhag of cooking in their century, in their time and place. So, what is the assumption of the Baal Ha'itr?
Can't let it touch the chachila.
What?
Can't let it piece of esrei touch.
Exactly. Precisely. Says the Baal Ha'itr equals the Tor in Yoredea. He says that it needs hadocha. And therefore, don't put it there l'chachila, because you might forget and eat without hadacha. Okay, that's explicit. However, says the, based on Pashup Shad of the Gemara in Pesachim, the Gemara says, there are different gesos in the Gemara. The Gemara clearly says, something which you use for chametz, you can use for cold matzah l'chachila. Meaning, again, none of our mothers would to let us do this at home. But let's say you had a chametz stick kli. Obviously, you ain't cooking a chametz stick pot. You cook in a chametz stick pot, makes your food chametz stick. But you can eat cold in a chametz stick pot. So if I wanted to have, I don't know, my Pesach cereal and milk, right? I could just take a chametz stick bowl and a chametz stick spoon, and it's all cold and no problem. Totally mutter. And that's is the psak of the Orchas Chaim. The Orchas Chaim is Rav Aaron Akom of Lunil, a halacha work from Lunil is in Provence, southern France. It's a very similar book to the Kolbo. There's a Kolbo, there's a Rishon. of unknown exact authorship that's quoted more often in the Beis Yosef and the Poskim. The Orchis Chaim is a longer version of the Kolbo, or the Kolbo is a shorter version of the Orchis Chaim. The historians aren't sure. But they quote here from the Darkei Moshe asked the Stira from the Orchis Chaim, says the Darkei Moshe, Yesh Lahakshos, first he quotes the Gemara. A klish and a shtamish bo chametz, different yourselves, you can use for cold matzah. And that's what the Tor quoted in Orach Chaim. Right? The Shach points out here that in the Torah Schatz, he quoted from the Orach Chaim, that it was Hilchos Chametz. And the Orach Chaim says, Kelim shel goy, you can put in spices or onions or even sharp things, because it's no problem. So, here we have the... Gemara Psachim equals Tor Orachayim, and the Orchis Chaim also equals a Tor Orachayim, who says that it is totally mutter to use lechachila, and obviously the food doesn't need hadacha, right? We say you can use this kli to eat food. Obviously, that means you don't have to rinse it afterwards. The difference is the Gemara in Pesach was talking about Hilchos Pesach. You can put, again, don't tell your mother this, she'll have a heart attack, and she'll think you're studying in like Hebrew in college for smicha. But you can eat your Pesachic food cold in chametz de kelim. And the Orchis Chaim learns from there that I think he's quoting he's also in the Torah. Am I wrong? Umvio Beis Yosef. Sorry. Okay, that's not in the Torah. I apologize. But still equals the Torah. You know, Vishulchan Aruch equals the Beis Yosef in Yoredea. Torah and the Shulchan Aruch. Fine. That says that it's perfectly fine. So here we have a stira. What? Does quote the Orchis Chaim? I also thought so, but then. But the Shach just says, Kosov Orchis Chaim and Vio Beis Yosef. Yeah, I also. This is the Rashba. Sorry, this is the Rashba. Okay. Limloch Basar. Sorry, good point. That's even Malichas Basar, Yayin Nesech. I think you got the commas wrong there. Okay, let it go. Okay, Seder. Anyway, Kitzer, maybe that's the Kitzer. Here's the Stira. The Stira is how come we find the Orchis Chaim says you can use Gaish Kli. The Orchis Chaim is a Mefurish Stira. You can use Gaish Kli Kalim. You can use Gaish Kalim. And the Gemara Psachim. So how do we resolve this Stira? The Darkei Moshe asked the Stira first. He was bothered by this theorem. What's the Darkei Moshe's answer to this theorem? How many answers did the Darkei Moshe give?
Three.
What's his first answer? He says, it depends if the food is moist or dry. Remember we said dry food doesn't transfer schmutz. So here we said it is lach, moist food. And the case over there was yavesh. Dry food, again, the reason I'm writing this, he doesn't mean liquid and solid. They're all solid foods. He means moist and dry. Meaning, when they said you can eat your matzah in a chametz de kli cold, it meant dry matzah. Right? Our matzah is dry. Even the Sephardic, even a pita is dry. Right? It meant dry matzah. It didn't mean moist, moist chicken or even cold, right? Or cereal or milk. And when the Orchis Chaim said you could, he wasn't dealing directly with the Orchis Chaim. The Orchis Chaim clearly, when he says you could put in onions or spices, he's talking about dry foods. Okay, that's one answer. The second answer, what was the second answer? The second answer only works it doesn't answer the Orchis Chaim, because the Darkei Moshe was not quoting the Orchis Chaim.
doesn't answer the Orchas Chaim. He says, this is by Pesach, where we are more Mekel. Oh, sorry, other way around. This is by Pesach, where we're more Mekel.
I didn't understand that.
Mekelim. And this is by Isser, where we're more Machmir. Now, why is that a bit of a chiddush, especially for Ashkenazim? Because we're always more Machmir in Pesach than by Isserim. But there are a few details we'll get to in the right time where we're more Mekel and Pesach than Isserim, at least for Svardim, and maybe somehow that crept in here. Okay, that's a dochy answer. First of all, it doesn't help for the Orchas Chaim. Okay, the Darkei Moshe wasn't quoting the Orchas Chaim. Toras Chatos was. So he had to say something different. And it's a little dochy because we're usually more Machmir Chametz, but we could be more Mekel than Chametz. Not so crazy.
You think it's Pasha, a Pesach more Mekel thing as opposed to like...
Yes.
Like,
yes, because there are one or two examples of that, even though they're not really so relevant, so it's dachuk. And, what, yeah?
Why doesn't it answer the Orchas Chaim?
Because the Orchas Chaim is talking about treif, not about Pesach. The Orchas Chaim says, just like you can eat off the chametz, the kelim kold, you can also eat off the goyish treif kelim kold. Okay, the third answer he gives is... Exactly, based on, there's different gersos in the Dvarim Pesachim. One gersa says... Any kli you use for cold chametz, you can use cold for matzah. So he says, it's a kli that was nivla, but here he says is, this is a kli, shebola b'chamin, and this is a kli, shebola b'tzonin. There's a difference between a kli that absorbed with heat and absorbed without heat. How does a kli absorb without heat anyway? Like kovash and maliach. It could be salted in it, or you could soak it in, or pickle in it. Right? Those are the two ways to be... Okay, so the difference is, if a kli was used hot, it has more schmutz absorbed in it, and therefore we're more machmer. If the kli was used cold, we're more mekel. Okay, and that has a potential strong basis. In the Toras Chatas, that is his first answer as well. Also, Toras Chatas, Teretz, Rishon. But what is the second answer, the Toras Chatas? Toras Chatas, Teretz, Sheni. What's the second answer in the Toras Chatas, of course? Then what's the difference between the cases? He just
say what?
Exactly. Here, the Lo Rachatz HaKli Heitev. And here, it depends if you wash the kli properly or not. This case where you wash the kli properly, which, I mean, the Orchas Chaim says, they were well-rinsed, and he says, no, it means they were actually well-rinsed, like a Jew really washed them properly. And the evaluator is when the kli was dirty, basically dirty kli or a clean kli, right? This is a dirty plate, and this is a clean plate, and what does he say? In a clean plate, what could the problem possibly be? In a clean plate, there's no schmutz. So what's the problem? I don't care what's absorbed in the plate. There's no heat, right? The absorption is not going to be without heat. There's no schmutz. Shalom al Yisrael. The Baal Inter is talking about a dirty plate. And who's talking about dirty plates? In the old days, plates were dirty more than they were now, and you don't have running water. So not everything's as clean as it is now. Okay, these are the four answers to resolve this stira. Let's see how we paskin. What does the Ramah paskin? Says the Ramah. Now we're up to the Ramah. In Sifbeis, the davka dorish yishbol achluchis ktsas. This is only something that has a little moisture. Well, dover yosh mamish, something totally dry. In lobola kli rak betzonein, if the original kli was only bolea through cold, motol aniach bo dover yavish bo docha klal, you can put a dry kosher food in it without any rinsing. Va'ayin lakam and simen kuf chaf beis, which is a clear toa sofer, and should say simen kuf chaf aleph. I have a little note in my edition, which on the side said, Nirid Sarach Lomasim and Kuf Chaf Aleph. Yeah, I think that's a, there are no two ways about it. Like, there's nothing Kuf Chaf Beis that seems wrong. Oh, yours says Kuf Chaf Aleph? Okay, great, even better. So we'll have to see some Kuf Chaf. What, basically, how's the Ramah paskening? Like, which of these answers? Give me numbers.
One and three.
One and three. Which one and three or one or three?
the Chumra or the Kula. Like, either one of them is good enough, or you need both of them. You need both of them, exactly. The Ramah's positive. Basically, he's not sure whether one is the right answer or three is the right answer, so he's Machmer both ways. So how about the Hachra? Let's put the Hachra here. Hachra says the Ramah, only mutter if you have one and also three. Meaning, if it's dry and the kosher food is dry and the treifli was only bolei abitzoni. So the treifli doesn't have so much schmutz because it was only bolei abitzoni. And the kosher food won't stick so much schmutz to it because it's dry, then you can be makel. Why? El chore, he thinks the real answer is either one or three. He's not sure which, so he's nervous to be makel unless you have both factors.
The kli could never be out.
What? It
could never be out.
No. Correct. Correct. I mean, unless you also use it for kosher food hot, that would be fine, but it can never be hot when it was used by the guy. So it would not be like a pot. The would be like a pitcher or something. Would, if you didn't know, you'd be macher. Okay, what does the Taz do to the Rama?
He says it's a mistake.
He says that's very machmir. He says that's obviously a misprint. So, what does the Taz Magia? He amends the Rama. What does he say? How does he change the Rama?
It's either or.
Exactly. Says the Taz, no mutter if you have one or three. Either way. Meaning, if your kosher food now is dry, that's fine regardless of how the kli became treif. If the kli only became treif cold, that's fine regardless of what your kosher food looks like. You need one factor to make it mutter. Why? He thinks one and three are both true answers. We can be somech on either of them. And he thinks that's the Ramash. I don't know why he was so sure. Just me svar. Well, the Ramah couldn't have been so machmer. He must have meant this, so he changed the Ramah. Okay, that's a little bold of him. I would not historically bet that the Ramah really meant what the Taz said he meant, but that's the Taz of Shita, the Seder. And what does the Shach do? He throws everything in the garbage. He says, all of these chilukim are ridiculous. They don't have a good mukkar. They're really not true. What does the Shach say the real answer is? Against the Rama?
Washington number four.
Exactly. The Shach says the real answer. Shach against the Rama. Right? He's against the Rama. He says, I don't like any of these Rama things. He says, the real answer is Pashut. I don't know why the Ramah was bothered by this in the first place. And I don't know why the Toras Chatos was bothered by this in the first place. And then had to come on to only his second answer. It's obvious that the Toras Chatos' second answer is correct. It's obvious the Bala Itzer was so meant a dirty kli. In a dirty kli talk, it's a problem. It's full of schmutz. And I think it's full of schmutz. If it's full of schmutz, then you can't put kosher food in it. And if you do put kosher food in it, you have to wash it. But the Gemara and the Orchas Chayim and all the other records, he quotes a few other Rishonim also, they were talking about if you clean the kli well, if you clean it well, there's no more schmutz on it. If there's no more schmutz, what could the problem possibly be? That is the Shita of the Shach. And the Shach points out that, here what's funny is, does the Ramah agree with the Shach? Right, if you just had the Ramah here, you would say, oh, that was the second answer of the Toras Chatos, but it wasn't an answer at all in the Darkei Moshe. And he disagrees with the Shach. He thinks there's no difference between a clean kli and a dirty kli. But if we're good listeners, I don't mean in terms of listen meaning to hear, I mean listening meaning to obey. The Ramah says, Ayin Lakaman Simen Kof Chaf Aleph, right? Yitz, and your Gemara, your Shulchan Aruch says Kof Chaf Aleph. So if we look later in Simen Kof Chaf Aleph, not all of us have Simen Kof Chaf Aleph in front of us, depending on where the break is, but I xeroxed it for you here. Says the Shulchan Aruch Simen Kof Chaf Aleph, Im Hegel Kli Yitzarach Libon, this is not our Inyan yet. Also, L'shtam Shul V'chamen Afilu Shul Oidei Eish. If a Kli was supposed to have Libon, and instead you only did Hagalah, then you can't use that Kli even for cooking, not on a barbecue.
If, I don't know if this makes any sense, but within the Shach,
if the dish is not clean, then don't we just go back to the second count, then you're going to have your cheese touching non-kosher meat, if the plate's not... No, okay, we're not talking about bidyeved. We're talking here about how it's mutter to eat l'chachila. We're not talking about bidyeved if you already put it there and then it's too late to rinse it. That's a different issue. Okay, says the Mechaber, which is not really our point. If you did Hagala when you should have done Liban, then you can't use it. You can't use it even with boiling water. The Havmina is if something became treif through cooking with boiling water, you do Hagala. If something became treif through roasting on a fire, which is hotter, you do Liban. What if you roasted pork on it? And then you're supposed to leave and you only do Hagala. You might think, well, I can't roast on it, but I can at least use it for cooking with boiling water. No, you can't use it for cooking at all. Says the Rambah, Aval Moto, the underline, Moto Sham Shot Sonin, you can use a treif kli for cold, Afil Chachila, even Chachila, the Adach of Shifsh of Heitev, by rinsing it and scrubbing it well. Kol Shkem Kli Sar Hagala, for sure kli that you needed Hagala and didn't do Hagala, meaning a treif kli you didn't kashra at all, is Moto to use for cold, is Moto to use for cold. For cold kosher. So the Rama explicitly says here that if you cleaned a treif kli well, you washed it and scrubbed it, even though you didn't kosher it, you can use it for cold. So what do we see here? The Rama didn't think this was the answer to the stira he was dealing with, but he thought it was true. L'chor, what the Rama meant is, he thought, even though this is a little, he thought that the Gemara Pesachim, the Torah in Or Chaim, and the Bala Itra in the Torah in your day, we're both talking about where it's a dirty kli. And then he had to find a difference between them, so he said, well, you can make a if it was only bole'al yitzonein, and the kosher food you're putting in now is very dry. But he admitted, if you clean the kli well, everyone admits. So halacha l'maisa, one second. I'm just going to make myself some more on the board. Halacha l'maisa, everyone agrees to the shach. Oh, sorry, you're in charge, Sal? Sorry, I'll erase that. You're in charge. I forgot who was in charge over Bina's body. The halacha l'maisa, everyone agrees if you have a clean treif kli, you can use it. So halacha l'maisa, you go over to your non-from cousin's house, and you want to eat regular kosher cold food, no hot food, just regular kosher food from the can, or the box, or whatever. It's no problem to use their treif kalim as long as they're washed very well, like in accordance with modern standards. Now, nowadays, most kalim are washed very well. That's just our modern standards.
Even if it was
bala b'chamin, that's the case in Simon Kof Kof Aleph. A kli that needs hagala was bala b'chamin. Or a kli that needs liba was bala b'chamin.
How does he use that to answer
this? What?
How does the Ramah use that to answer this stira then?
The Ramah doesn't. Or the Ramah thinks that the stira is two cases.
Oh,
where they're both dirty. So let's do halacha l'maisa. We have to add a few. This is very halacha l'maisa, right? Halacha l'maisa. Halacha l'maisa. What about case one, dirty kli? What if the kli is dirty? Right? Then, what if the kli is dirty? Then, the Ramah would say that mutter im bala hakli betzonein v'hamachal haheter hu yavish, right? He would say, even if it's a dirty kli, if you have one in three, that it is mutter. And the shach would say, nope, there's no heter. He doesn't like any of those heterim in the Ramah. He thinks the only difference is a clean kli and a dirty kli. There's no other differences. The Ramah thinks even besides a clean kli, there's a heter if you have these two factors together. And the Shach disagrees with this. Halacha l'maisa, it would seem to me that we would be machmer like the Shach here. And if you had a dirty kli, it wasn't well, the kli was not scrubbed well and dishwashed in modern standards, then don't put your kosher food in it at all.
Why can't the bliya be the chamin?
Because apparently when the bliya is bechamin, there's more sticky schmutz.
And therefore, when it's dirty.
Yes. What about a clean kli? What about a clean kli? A clean treif kli, right? A dirty treif kli and a clean treif kli. So the shach in Simon Sadi Aleph and the Ramah in Simon Kof Kof Aleph both agree that it's totally mutter to eat your kosher food in that clean kli. There are going to be some details. What are some of the details? Yes?
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No.
I was just going to ask why the Ramah wouldn't think why he wouldn't think that the Shas is the answer to this theorem.
It's an amazing question, and I don't know. It's a mystery to me. I wish I knew the answer to that question. Like, why did the Ramah just say that's the answer to the Stira? He held it anyway in some Kuf Aleph, so why not just say that's the answer to the Stira? I wish I knew.
Well, he did. He sort of did.
In the second answer right. In the Torah's Chatas, so why in the Darkei Moshe didn't he think of it? And why was it only a second answer in the Torah's Chatas?
Yeah, anyway, you have that question anyway. Why is he giving different answers?
Right. Yeah, Sarfia. Yeah.
So it would have to be cold.
Cold. All talking about cold. Right?
Eating cold in a treif kli. We're all talking about cold here. No, I'm saying for two, you said there has to be some factors. So would it be that the kli has to be only cold? Or
we're here?
Yeah.
No.
Even if the kli was hot.
Yes. 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 Even if the kli was used for hot. So the Shach says, no, that's... the Shach says, it doesn't matter if it's used for hot or cold. If it's a clean kli, it's mutter. And the Ramah in Siman Kochav Aleph also says, even a kli that needs Hagalah, or even a kli that needs Liban. A kli that needs Liban was clearly used for hot. Then it needs Hagalah, it doesn't prove it. A kli that needs Liban was clearly used for hot. And yet, he says it's mutter to eat cold food from the kli.
At the time that the food in the kli can't be hot.
Oh, correct, sorry. At the time the food in the kli...
No,
sorry.
I was talking about just in general, if the kli was ever...
Yeah.
We don't pass it like that recently.
Time.
Right. At the time, you can't put in a hot kli because then it heats your food.
A davar la'as based on what we say here would be a factor.
No.
What do you say?
Why? Why do you say that?
No, because I'm saying when he says here we have a davar davar sheyesh bo b'chol.
That's the Ramah.
Yeah, I'm saying no. According to the Ramah.
That's the Ramah here.
Yeah, but...
But the Ramah here, I'm saying, is talking about a kli that wasn't scrubbed.
So we're looking at over here, it's not
yes,
here.
I have to.
Okay.
Because otherwise the steer in Kof HaFalf was used for hot, and that's not good enough here, according to the real gears of the Ramah. Okay, Halach L'maisa, what are some details? Number one, details. How clean or... How do you have to clean the kli? If I want to eat on a treif kli, how well do I have to clean it? The shach here is a super duper makel. Anyone notice how super duper makel the shach was? I know we didn't get to the last line of the shach. Says the shach super duper kula. He says shakinuach yafehu b'chol makom kadocha. Wiping it with a towel is always as good as washing it. Ubala itamari v'lo kinuach. The Bala Eter was only machber when you didn't wipe it. Devadin kinecha kli benin shein shamnus kaf. You wiped up all the shamnunis, then there's no ein svar lach b'chol kol docha. Says the shach kinuach. You can just wipe it with a rag. You don't even need water. Okay, this is like bachur apartment. Said the shach, if I wipe it well with a towel, that gets it totally clean. And now I can use it for cold food. So if I have like a dirty, I don't know, bowl that someone ate, a treif meat stew out of, I just wipe it well with a towel, and now I can eat my cereal milk from it, my Cheerios from it.
Lechatchila,
says the Shach. That's a big chumrah. That's a big cool, I mean, because if you look at the Ramah in Siman Kof Chav Aleph, that's not what he said. He said, Avol mot lo sham shav sonar afilo chachila di hadofa v'shif shav heite, says the Ramah. No, hadocha, rinsing with water, v'shif shav heite, and scrubbing well. You need water and a sponge. Or water and a dishwasher, right? Which is like a sponge. It's a good dishwasher. Sometimes dishwashers aren't so good. It has to be a working, a good dishwasher. Says the Ramah, no. You want to eat cold in a treif kli, it has to be cleaned really well. Not just wiped with a rag. We assume like the Ramah. Monday Poskim will assume like the Ramah. The Shach was being a little too meagre. When he says wiping with a towel is good enough, I don't know. He was too impressed by the Bachur apartments. That's not... That's not what we assume. We assume like the Ramah. No. When can you eat cold on a treif kli? Only.
Where's this Bachur brought
Machlokas is not.
I
mean, the Shach says Kinuach here, and the Ramah says Hadach v'Shifshof on the hand that I gave you. the Shach doesn't say I'm coming to argue on the Ramah and Simon Kuf Chav Aleph, but he is. I think, you know, unless he says the Ramah would really agree with me, that's hard for me to imagine. Now, there are two exceptions. Halakha L'maisa, there are two exceptions. Exception one. What's the first exception? The Ramban Simon Kuf Chav Aleph has an exception. This is based, okay, it's based on a story called a Pincha of Rabbi Ami. There's a Pincha of Rabbi Ami. The Pincha is some sort of tray, cheres tray. It must have been cheres because they say they just threw it before it smashed it. That they salted in. Anyone know if you salt meat, the blood comes out? Why doesn't the blood then like make everything treif after it comes out? Anyone ever salt meat? I salt meat. I put salt on the meat, the blood comes out. So why won't the blood make everything treif? No. What? Because the blood falls down onto the floor. And I have to put holes in the kli or make the kli slanted. I can't just like put my meat in a bowl and salt it because then it'll soak in the blood and be worse off than it started. I have to either poke holes, put it on a rack with holes, or I have to put it on a slanted board. All right? I think usually nowadays they just use like a bin with like a lot of holes in it or a reshet or something. Although I remember when I was a Rebbe in MTA, my Talmidim, who didn't have any fancy things and they wanted to salt chickens, they would just take the desk they gave them in the MTA dorm room and put one side on a book and one side not on a book, and then we slanted and all the blood would go down to the floor. But that's Bachar. I would not do that myself in my house. It says that he accidentally, someone in his house accidentally salted meat in this tray and it didn't make holes in the tray and didn't tilt it. And basically the meat got treif, they threw in the garbage and the tray got treif. So they broke it. And all the Rishonim asked, why did they break it? Why didn't they save it to use for cold food? Well, it's not a mukhrif question. You could just say it was very cheap and it wasn't worth it. But the Mordechai and many Rishonim say, no, because everyone knows. Let's say you have this treif kli. I'm only going to use it for cold. What's going to happen eventually? I'm going to use it for hot. If I go to my non-from cousin's house and I use it for cold once, I'm not going to end up using it for getting used for hot because I know I'm in my non-from cousin's house and like it's different and then I'm going to go home back to normal life. But if you just have a regular kli you use all the time, then you're going to end up forgetting. I mean, that's an obvious. We would all have made this gzera even if we never heard of Chazal, right? This is like an obvious common sense gzera. Right. Oh, it's ridiculous. I could use all my fleshig bowls for cold milchik and all my milchik bowls for cold fleshig. You're going to mess up eventually. As opposed to once I go to someone's house who's not from, and okay, so you're careful and because you know that it's a special case. Says the Ramah in Kuf Chav Aleph, the second underlined line, fourth word. V'dafka b'derech arai. This whole heter of using a treif kli is only ba'arai. Like you're in a goyish house, or you're b'dieved here, it means you're stuck in some case. Aval im rotze, right? Someone's moving, and they packed up all their dishes, and all they can find is a fleshik bowl, and they need to eat Cheerios. Okay, so that's ba'arai, b'dieved. They're stuck. So they eat Cheerios once, they're not going to forget, because that's not their normal lifestyle. Aval im rotze shamshol b'keva. But if you want to use it bekeva for cold, yesh machmirim va'omer dafilu shamshul tzomin tzarcha galibam. Machmirim say that even if you only want to use it for cold, you have to kasher it properly first. Gzeira shem yishtamshul v'chamin. Because the gzeira you might forget and use it for hot, v'chachin no'agin, and that is the minhag. So that's exception number one. This is the Ramah. I'll be the Mordechai. The Ramah simen kuf kuf aleph. I'll be the Mordechai. Right? Arai mutter, but bekeva it is usser. And that's based on how they explain why they broke the dish in Rami's house. Because whatever, it's a regular dish in their house. They use a bekeva for cold, they would end up using it for hot, for sure. So therefore we make that gzera. And that makes a lot of sense. Therefore, if you treif up a kli, you can't just say, I'll save it to use for cold from now on. Because you're going to mess up and use it for hot for sure. You have to kasher it or throw it in the garbage, if depending on whether or not it is kasherable. And likewise for fleshig and milchik, if you have a one-time case where you packed up all your dishes, you can only find a fleshig bowl, and you want to eat
You want to eat cereals and milk? Okay, that's ba'arai. But bekeva to say, well, I have a lot of cereal and milk, so I'll just use my fleshy bowls half the time. No, because then you're going to end up messing up.
Is it considered bekeva let's say, the friendlies case? Every single time you go to friendlies, you're going to have it added.
I think that's still considered a rai. I think that's still considered a rai. And therefore, ba'arai, you go to friendlies, ba'arai. It's not like to your house you're going to like mix things up. Like you're not going to order like the hot food at friendlies. You only go and you order once at a blue moon, or however often you get the ice cream friendlies. I don't know if you eat at friendlies every day. I don't know. But pashtas, that means you're in a strange place in very unique circumstances that are not part of your regular lifestyle. It doesn't seem to be a gzeira there.
The herring case there must seem like
That they went. Yeah, but still, that was ba'arai. Correct, correct. That shows even that's considered ba'arai. Good. Okay, I'm with you. And for sure, going over your non-from cousin's house, you know, that's ba'arai. That's not bad. That's not bad. That's not bekev. As opposed to, you know, using it as part of your regular lifestyle. Okay, that is one exception. There might be another exception also, because if you look, let's look at the Rashba here. See, the other thing I put on this sheet? Where do we want to start? let's start from the end of the seventh line, the Hai Pincha, about that Pincha. He says, the Hai Pincha, not the underlying part, but the Rashba, the end of the seventh line. Hai Pincha, Tavala Ravami, why did Ravami break the Pincha? I've got the Chazal Shemushib at Sonein. It was Trefi. Why not just use it for cold? Shem Gzeira Dasa, the Shemushib at Chaman, who just overlay. No, because the Gzeira, if you use it for cold, you might end up using it for hot. Like Rav has a strange Shita that you have to break your Chametz Dik pots on Pesach because of Chomesh Avelor Pesach. Why not just save them for cold? Because you're going to end up using them for hot. The Teda Da'i L'Kuli Am L'Dachim Yav Asagilei Afilu Hachi Tavra. In that case, for sure, if you had used it for cold, worse comes to worse, you have to rinse it. No, you have to break it. V'inami. Or a second possibility, Efshar Lomer Da'i Pincha Kevin Shel Cheres Haisa. Since that Pincha was Cheres. How does he know it was Cheres? Stum, if you break it, it was Cheres. Usually you break Cheres. V'nivla al yidei roteach, and also if they didn't kasher it, some stone was cheres, right? And it absorbed through heat. Ein latakana filu betzonin. You can't even use it for cold food. Chumra. Kli cheres is different. You can't use a kli cheres even for cold food. Why? And debolas hi harbe, because cheres absorbs a lot. Right? You know kli cheres, right? You can't kasher a kli cheres. Or it's made a kli cheres that it can never be kasherable. Cheres has to be broken. We don't really understand what a kli cheres is. Because we don't have, like, pure kli cheres like they had in the old days. Like, our dishes we treat as kli cheres because they're glazed cheres. But they're not pure cheres. Maybe sometimes you buy a flower pot, it could be pure cheres. Cheres is really disgusting. It's really gross. It's not like, the reason why we have no cheres in our modern kitchens is because it just would be considered non-hygienic by modern standards to use in any way, shape, or form. Nothing to do with kashrus. No one would ever use kli cheres nowadays because it's just too disgusting. It's impossible to clean a kli cheres. No matter how much you clean it, it's still schmutzy because just it's so absorbent that it's just full of schmutz from one side to the other side. And it's just gross. It's unhygienic. So he says, what about kli cheres? He says kli cheres is more chumer. Even to eat cold food in a trade kli cheres is a problem because it absorbs so much. He says only if it was used with hot. Okay, but you don't have to make that shalom. Atzvo letza fil betzonin, it will release the absorbed schmutz even into cold foods. Why? Because it's so full of schmutz that it just oozes out all the time. The helka called tzonin shenishtamish bo madicho. Therefore, any cold food you put in a treif kli cheres, you'd have to wash the food, and therefore you can't use the kli cheres because you might forget to wash the food when you eat it. Right, if we just add on the Bala Iter, which he seems to be assuming. So says the Rashba, your new Chiddush. There's a difference in Kli Cheres and other Kalim. That was also found in our Shach. If you look in our Shach, he says, the last thing the Shach says is this Isser of Keva. Right? Also the Shach here. The Shach just quotes the Raman Kuf Chaval. But the second last thing the Shach says was Inami Hua Eker, Desfirle de Kli Cheres Shiny. Kli cheres is different. The Gama Rashba mode of kli cheres. The Rashba's mode in kli cheres. And the Torah of the Mechaber holds kli cheres is mutter. Okay. So,
He says basically his question was this: why do Tosfos and the Mordechai machmir on moist things in a treif kli? The answer is because that was a kli cheres. Okay, says the Shach, kli cheres is different. Now the Ramad didn't say this in Simen Kuf Chav Aleph, but you can't even dike anything from Ramad Kuf Chav Aleph because he's talking about a kli which you didn't yet kasher using it for cold. L'chori, he's not talking about a kli cheres. That's not a kli you didn't yet kasher. That's a kli. It's not kasher or bull. So he's not directly talking about kli cheres. The Shach here directly talks about kli cheres. Here is exception two. And no one said anything to Kevin Arai here necessarily. Says the Shach, Al Pi Rashba, Kli Cheres is Aser Afilu Arai. Even Arai, Kli Cheres is Aser. So a Kli Cheres, you go to your non-from cousin's house and they give you a Kli Cheres, that's Aser even by Arai. Now here I've cheated a little. But because I already read you the Rashba. But look at the Prima Gadim here. Look at the Prima Gadim for one second. In the Prima Gadim... One second. Prima Gadim in Sif Se Das. Sif Katan. Let me just find it. Gimel. Where he says... Or you could just let me read it. Where he says... Okay, just listen to me read it. It's a very long sif katan. It's about a little more than halfway through. The kol zeh b'shar kelim kli cheres aser l'shtamish bo tzonin afilo de'adochs kli. Even if you wash the kli cheres, you can't use it to eat cold kosher food. Ayin toras chatas, etc. Da'atam kevin de yefshar b'hagola gazrina min yatiru lo l'shtamish derech harai yavoli de takola. Here you have a big chakira. What's the big chakira? It's funny that the Prima Gadim here doesn't quote the Rashba. Apparently he rejects the Rashba himself. Why? Lama machmirim bikli cheres afilu l'shtamish bo arai. So what did the Rashba say? The Rashba said, because it's bolas harbe upoletes afilo bitzonein, which sounds gross to us, but it's scientifically accurate. Yeah, it's really gross. A kli cheres just is always gross. Meaning you can't get it clean. It's always schmutzy. No matter how many times you scrub it, it's still schmutzy, because the schmutz just comes oozing out. Says the Prima Gadim, a different reason. Because kevan de'i efshar lehagilo, since you can't kasher it, gazrinan afilu be'arai shema yochal bochanin. Or shema yochal bochanin, really, is the lashon that most poskim use. Okay, that's a big chiddush. It's not as intuitive to me. I would have gone with the Rashba personally. He says, the Raya from the Pincha of Ravami. Okay, that's the Rashba. He says, you know why we're more machber on a kli cheres? Because a kli cheres can't be kashered. If it can't be kashered, then we have more gzeiras, because, like, you're not just going to say, let me kasher it. And therefore, even if you only use it bar rai, we're afraid you might end up using it for hat. That's a big chiddush. Just because, I mean, I understand I can't kasher it, so it's, I don't have the option of kashering it. So still, just because I use barai for cold, why would I use for hot? If I use, like, in friendlies for cold, they have kli cheres or something, why would I come to eat hot there? I go to my non-from cousin's house. But that's what he thinks. He thinks, since you don't have an option of kashering it, a normal kli, if you want to use for hot, you'll kasher it. This kli, since you don't have an option of kashering it, even if you only use it occasionally for cold, you might come to use it for hot, and it's usher. Tremendous nafkamina, says the Prima Gadim, the Chumra does not only apply to Kli Cheres, it applies to anything you can't kosher. And he has other examples of things you can't kosher, like ivory can't be koshered.
It would also be an afghanic if the effort the tzonin fell in, so the Prima Gadim would say you already had the alchot, and the Raj would say you didn't end
up. Yes, that would also be a good nafghanina. Now, what's the big nafghanina, I think, between the Rashba and the Prima Gadim? Modern day plates. Our modern day China, by which China, I mean the same, whether it's like cheap weekday China or fancy Shabbos China. They're all the same. They're made of cheres, which is coated with glass. Glazed cheres.
glazed pottery. So, and we assume you can't kosher our dishes. Okay. Rav Abadi holds that he's made one everything. He assumes that our dishes never become treif because they're glass. It's a little more complicated than that. Maybe we'll get to it. But we assume mainstream Mishnah Brura that you can't kosher our dishes. Mishnah Brura says glazed, I'm summarizing it, glazed pottery cannot be koshered if it's treif. Okay, and that's, I think, the minhag in all places I've seen, that if dishes get treif, you can't kosher them. The guy where Moshe has kulas after 12 months, Malcolm has some merubah, etc., normal cases. So, what about our dishes? Could you use, like, regular, like, China dishes, ba'arai, meat for milk, or milk for meat, or kosher treif for kosher, etc.? According to the Prima Gadim, maybe we machri, say, since you can't kosher them, they're gosher, don't even use them arai, lest you use them hot. But according to the Rashva, well, there's, of course there's no problem. Of course there's no oozing schmutz from our dishes. But maybe inside they're cheres, but they don't ooze all the time like they did in the old days. They're still hygienic because they're coated with glass. So that might, not to take away from the other nafkamina, but maybe a nafkamina would be our dishes. According to the Prima Gadim, ulai aser afilu ba'arai. Because according to the Prima Gadim, we're machmer on all dishes that are not kosherable, and you can't even use them for kol arai. But according to the Rashba, poshen this doesn't apply to our dishes. We all see that our dishes don't make everything full of schmutz. They don't ooze schmutz all the time. So if you go to your non-from cousin's house, what do you mean? They serve you in like regular dishes. So according to the Prima Gadim, after you could be machmer on that. But according to the Rashba, of course not to be machmer on that. Because they don't ooze schmutz all the time. Okay, halach lemaisa,
for many reasons, I think we can be makel,
and we can assume that all kinds of dishes nowadays, if you go to your non-from cousin's house or you're staying in a goyish place or something, and you know they're washed very well, that you can eat cold, kosher food from a cold treif dish, even if it is china, which is like a kli cheres inside, because since it doesn't ooze schmutz, the Rashba's reason doesn't apply. And even if you say the Prima Gadim's reason might apply, it's not clear that we're machmer like the Prima Gadim. And also, since there is a tzad to say that maybe our modern day dishes aren't treif anyway, which we'll get to. So therefore, there's enough room to be makel, and I don't think we have to be choshesh for what would come out of this Prima Gadim regarding our modern dishes. So that's halacha l'maisa. You can eat cold food off a properly clean treif dish, even if it is cheres inside, as long as it's not cheres through and through, which would never happen nowadays anyway, because that would be, even third world countries, I don't think, do that nowadays, although I never checked. But that would never happen. Okay, so much for Sif Beis. Yes?
Why is it this one the answer to the Darkei Moshe of the difference between Balei Heter and the Torah? About just saying one is Cheres and one is not Cheres.
The Shach uses that to answer Tosin and Mordechai, not to answer the original question. Why doesn't the Rama think to say that? First of all, maybe he doesn't hold from this. We're not sure. He never weighs in personally what he holds about this, but it could also be I'm not sure. It's a good question. Okay. Now we're ready for Sif Gibel. Sif Gibel. Sarach li zar shlo yigah basar b'lechem. You have to be careful not to let meat touch the bread. You have to be careful not to let meat touch bread. Why? Shem yigah bo asar l'achlo im agvina. Because if the meat touches the bread, then the bread gets the shmus from the meat, and you can't eat it with cheese. Pein yizar shlo yigah bo agvina. Shem yigah bo asar l'achlo im basar. And also be careful not to let your cheese touch the bread, because then it will be asar to eat with meat. Okay, so you have to be careful to keep your bread pariv and not make a milchel or fleishik, because then it'll be usher to eat with the other kind of food. Here the Shach discusses that, what do you mean? Why not just wash off the bread? right? So the Shach says, well, Shachir says, ah, what it means is it would be usher to eat with the other type of food without washing it, and we're afraid you might eat the bread with the other type of food without washing it. Remember, in those days, they eat bread with everything. So whenever they had cheese, they made cheese sandwich. Whenever they had meat, they made meat sandwich. So if your bread becomes fleshic, we're afraid you might forget to wash it and eat it with milk. And if your bread touches cheese, we're afraid you might forget to wash it and eat it with meat. Therefore, don't let it touch in the first place. In the Pesachei Tshuva here, he quotes in Sefkat and Dal, a discussion of the Knesset Gdola, does washing really work for bread or not? Intuitively, you see how. Why intuitively might you think that washing doesn't work for bread the way it does for meat and cheese?
Doesn't wash it off.
Because it doesn't wash off. It's too porous, right? You can imagine washing off a piece of cheese. You don't wash off bread, you wash in bread. So that's the Knesset Gedolah's argument. I'm not going to go through all the rayas back and forth. Bottom line, the Knesset Gedolah says, no, that's not what he means. The Shulchan Aruch meant you can't wash off bread. Bread doesn't get clean if you wash it. And in the end, the Pesachei Tshuva paskind, a nice compromise. In the end, the Pesachei Tshuva paskind, a nice compromise, which just makes sense, common sense. He says, it depends where the bread touched the meat and cheese. If it touched the inside of the bread, then you can't wash that off. Because when you let water touch the inside of the bread, it just drips in. It doesn't wash it out. But if it touched the hard crust outside of the bread, then maybe you could wash that off, because that's hard, and you could wash it off. Okay, that's the compromise of the Pesachei Tshuva in the end between the Knesset Gedolah and the... I must admit, in our modern-day lifestyle, I don't know if we would wash off the bread anyway. We would probably just eat it all now or throw it out or whatever. But theoretically, how about Hadacha? The Lechem... The Shach says, Mahani, it works. The Knesset HaGdola, quoted in the Pesachei Tshuva, says, Lo Mahani, it doesn't work. The bread is so soft, the water just drips everything in. It doesn't take the schmutz out. It just drips the schmutz in. And the Pesachei Tshuva makes a pshara. He says it depends on the soft inside. Washing doesn't work. And on the hard crust, then washing does work. Okay, I know that's very lemaisa for us, but it makes sense what the Pesachei Tshuva says. What? That would for sure help. That's what he points out. He points out that even if washing doesn't work, you can always just peel off the outside layer or scrape it off. Okay, Sif Dalet. Please. I don't think you got this yet. Or at least not some of it. Sif Dalet. Here's a machlokas in Psachim Daf Ayin Vav Amud Aleph. What if, until now, Aleph Beis Gimel have been cold touching cold? Right? Now we're ready for, what about hot touching cold? Now, there's something a little funny. From Siv Dalid through the rest of Siman Sadi Aleph is the halachas of, what about the transfer of tastes in different types of heat and saltedness, etc.? Is the same topics are discussed twice in the Simonim we're going to learn. In Siman Tzadi Aleph, it's discussed, what if meat touches milk, and this is hot, and this is salty, etc. And in Siman Kuf Hei, it's discussed, what if treif touches kosher in the exact same circumstances. And it's a little funny, the Mechaber is not so well organized conceptually. He throws in some details in Siman Tzadi Aleph, in the context of meat touching milk, some details in Siman Kuf Hei, in the context of treif touching kosher, but not for any reason, right? It's not like one has to do more with meat and milk and one has to do more with treif and kosher, just randomly. I mean, not randomly, based on historical accidents of in what context some rishon happened to discuss something that someone else picked up on, etc. Okay, so we're going to have to fill in some details from Siman Kuf Hei, but we'll start with what we have here in Siman Tzadi Aleph. Basar v'cholav rotchen shesar v'yachad. Basar v'cholav that are hot that get mixed together, b'afilu basar tzonin into cholav roteach, cholav tzonin into basar roteach, or even if hot, cold meat falls into hot milk, or cold milk falls onto hot meat, hakol asar, everything's awesome, shum to tatag gavar, because the bottom wins. Okay, this is referring to a machlokas in Psachim daf ayin vav. In Psachim daf ayin vav, the context there is like treif parts of the Korban Pesach versus kosher parts of the Korban Pesach, ayin vav and aleph. There is a machlokes between Rav and Shmuel. about kam l'toktsonein, hot lands on cold or cold lands on hot, whether tata gavar, the bottom one wins, or ila gavar, or the top one wins. Right? So here, I can erase the board, right, Patel?
Yep.
Thank you so much. Says Rav, ila gavar, the top one wins. Says Shmuel, Sachem daf ayin vav amud aleph. It's hard to believe that says Sachem ayin vav amud aleph. Shmuel says tata gavar, the bottom one wins. And we paskin like Shmuel that the bottom one wins. What does that mean? If hot falls onto cold or cold falls into hot, the bottom one is koveya. If the bottom one's cold, it's not boleya. And if the bottom one's hot, it is boleya. That's what we paskin, the bottom one wins. Which means that, with one small exception, that if you have hot on top of cold, that equals cold, with one small exception. And if you have cold on top of hot, that equals hot. And that's what we just said. That if you have hot on hot or cold on hot or equivalent, it's called hot because the bottom one wins. Meaning the bottom one, by wins, overpowers, right? That's what Gavar really means. The bottom one overpowers.
Why do we pass like Shmuel?
Why do we pass like Shmuel when we always pass like Rav and Yisurim? Because the Gemara says here, Tanya kvase de Shmuel, etc. The price is for Shmuel.
And we call the entire mixture cold?
Yeah, almost, yes. With one light, slight exception that we'll point out, but the Gemara said...
Almost.
But the Gemara says one thing at the bottom of Dafayim Vavun Aleph, which we'll read in the Shulchan Aruch. Aval cholav roteach shenafal basar tzonin. Hot, boiling hot milk that fell on cold meat. O basar roteach shenafal to cholav tzonin. Or hot meat that fell into cold milk. Meaning the bottom is cold. It's totally mutter, except cold asterisk. What's the exception? Kolefa basar ushara basar mutter. You have to peel the meat. The outer peel of the meat becomes treif. So you have to peel the meat and throw out the peel, and the rest of it is mutter. I'm going to skip the Ramah and just read the mechaber v'acholav mutter kulo, but the milk is all mutter because you can't peel it. V'imnafu zelotok zetzon v'imediach basar mutter. However, if they fell into them, into each other cold, you just rinse it and it is mutter. Okay, rinsing cold is mutter, we know from Aleph through Gimel. The chiddush here is, now we've covered everything. Cold onto cold is rinsing, like Aleph through Gitzif, Aleph, Beis, and Gimel. Hot onto hot is all usser. Cold onto hot is all usser, because the bottom one, tata gavar, and it's like hot. Hot onto cold is almost. What is the Lashon of the Gemara? The Lashon of the Gemara is almost mutter. Ademe karle bala kide klifa. Ad mekarle, while it is mekarle, it's bolea kide klifa. So it's aser kide klifa, meaning klifa literally peel, the outer peel is aser. So you have to take off the outer peel and throw it in the garbage. How big is the outer peel? So the Rishonim say there's different words. There's some words that are thick peels. But when we say the word kide klifa, we mean literally klifa, like klif, like to be kolef. The thinnest layer you can peel is usser, and everything else is mutter. So just take your thinnest peeler, peel off one layer, and the rest is mutter.
It's only applied to milk and meat, or also anything?
Also treif. For example, let's say I had my hot chicken fell into a my hot chicken fell into let's say good example hot chicken fell into treif. Soup. My hot chicken fell into treif wine, right? Then I just have to take out the hot chicken, peel off the outer peel, and it would be mutter.
If my
hot chicken fell onto a piece of cold pork, then I would just have to peel off, but not all around the chicken, only the bottom of the chicken, because only the bottom of the chicken touched the pork, and then the rest would be mutter. That's halacha lemaisa. Real halacha lemaisa. You know when else this can happen all the time? With like splashes. Let's say, for example, you know, I am carrying a pot of chicken soup, hot chicken soup, and a little bit splashes and lands on a piece of cheese. That's hot on cold. What's the din? Not the chicken soup. Only a little bit splashed and that's gone. What's in the cheese? I just peel off a little of the cheese where the chicken soup landed, and the rest is okay. Halacha l'maisa. Okay. The shtaz here brings down two pshatim on what ademekar le means. What's the root of mekar? Most people assume like Rashi. What's the root of mekar? Right, exactly. Rashi says kar. Meaning, it turns cold because tata gover, the bottom one wins. But while it turns cold, it takes a second to turn cold, and during that second, it's molayak, they klipa only the outermost layer. That's what most people assume. However, the Taz does point out the Isser v'heter ha'aruch. It quotes a different pshat from the Mordechai. The Mordechai assumes it's not from kar, but from yakar. What does yakar mean?
Expensive.
Expensive, but here, heavy. Yakar can also mean heavy. Like, yakar be'inei Hashem ha'mav salah chasidav. Doesn't mean it's dear and precious to Hashem when when pious people die. It means it weighs heavily on Hashem when pious people die. But it's very similar. Like it's not two different meanings. It's really the same meaning. Anyway, yakar heavy, and he says it means while it weighs upon it, it makes a boleik de klipa. Because after all, this hot thing puts pressure, it weighs, it puts gravity, its weight on the cold. Okay, but it doesn't really matter. We'll see how it matters a little for a shach much later, but let's assume it doesn't really matter whether ademekerle means while it cools off or while it is weighing on it, while it's pressing on it with its weight. Either way, the point is boleik de klipa. That is halacha lemaisa. Whenever you have Cham L'Tov Tzonein, it is Boleya Kedei Klipa. That's where we get it, for example, at Hilchos Shabbos also, right? That if you pour hot onto cold, it only cooks Kedei Klipa, which is why you'd be allowed to pour hot water onto a baby bottle that's cold, because it'll only cook the outer layer, and the outer layer is the plastic of the baby bottle, which is not subject to cooking. So that's the Halacha L'Maisa. Seems fairly straightforward. Now, before we get into the details, maybe I'll point out a few things. That this is a tricky one. Because we want to know, why the bottom one wins. First of all, why according to Rav the top one wins, I don't know. But let's think of the way we posken. Why according to Shmuel does the bottom one win? Why would the bottom one win? If the bottom one is cold, it's considered cold, except that to make a label like a klipa. And if the bottom one is hot, it's considered hot, and it's all treif. Why should the bottom one win over the top one? What made it so special? Why would the bottom one win?
There's a sort of a cliche with Tosfos by Shabbos, because it's in a kli. Meaning, why is a kli? Meaning, why
but,
it goes into one kli, the bottom one wins because it's in a hot kli. It's on a, and it's influenced by its surroundings.
The bottom one wins because it has obviously, where's the bottom one? It's got to be someplace, right? So it's in a kli. So
see,
the bottom one's in a kli, the top one's not in a kli.
That's why in Shabbos, kli shemi is...
Like the Tosos. You're like the Tosos. The Fanos Makaros, the Fanos Makamos. Right. That's a nice svara. You hear Joshi's svara. The bottom one, if the bottom one's hot, it's in a hot kli. And the top one, if the bottom one's hot and the top one's cold, then the cold thing has no kli supporting it. The bottom one is in a hot kli, so the kli makes it hot. If the bottom one's cold, it's in a cold kli. The hot thing on top is no kli, so the kli makes it cold. It's a nice svara. So, why is Tata Gavar? So, one answer is it's a Metzius. This is a Pashup Pshat, right? The Pshat is this is a Metzius. What do I mean? This is a scientific fact. It's not a Chalois. It's a fact. It's a fact that the top one is Gavar. Why? So one answer may be because of the kli. The bottom one's in a kli. And if the kli is hot, it makes it all hot. If the kli is cold, it makes it all cold. Good shot. I saw someone else wanted to say once.
And
they'd be arguing Metzius. And we deal with it somehow.
Oh, that's crazy. It's a hard Metzius.
Yeah. The other option I heard, thrown around these shoes, Velt, is because heat rises. If heat rises, by the way, cold also rises. If heat rises, like you just think about it, if heat rises, that means cold rises. It doesn't mean that cold goes down. Heat rises, meaning, if you think about it, here, the heat rises into the cold one, so it's all hot. Tata gaber. Over here, the heat rises into the air, and so this is all cold. So it's tata gaber. So maybe because heat rises, so whatever's on bottom wins, so the heat rises upwards. Right? Over here, the heat rises and beats this one. Here, the heat rises into the air, but the cold beats the hot. Okay, maybe something else. Maybe someone come up with another shot. I don't know. You know, maybe there's some other reason.
The Rav was very, very convinced that this is a halos, not a mitzvah.
Yes. He says, what do you mean? Right? The Rav once told someone, apparently. Apparently, the Rav told Rav Schefter or something, until my grandfather, your day was just pots and pans. What did the Rav mean by that? The Rav meant by that is that it's that everyone thought it was just the machlokes and metzias. When does this do this? And when does that? How far does the taste penetrate? And it was all things that, you know, you can measure in a lab nowadays. Since they didn't have labs, they just came up with theories and argued in metzias. And the Rav said, no, but he understood it from his grandfather. It's all machlokes and chalos. It has nothing to do with metzias. Okay, the advantages and disadvantages are obvious. The advantages of it all being chalos is that then you don't have to say they're arguing metzias and you have to figure out their scientific reasons. This is, it's not what it sounds like from all the Rishonim and Acharonim.
What's the shot here?
Ah, so he says, so the Rav here has a big fish. The Rav points out, we'll get to this in Simon Kof, hey, the famous Machlokes Rishonim. What about a klisheni? Let's say I dip my hot dog in a klisheni of hot chocolate. Will it absorb the milk or not? Right? Or let's say someone has a bowl of treif soup. Right, and I drop my my kugel in the bowl of treps, bowl of treps soup. Will it absorb or not? After all, klisheni is not really hot, so maybe it won't absorb. Or that's what most Rishonim say. Or the Rashi says, no, what do you mean? I don't care about the halos of klisheni. Like, we all know it's going to absorb. We paskin the ikra again, depends on who you ask, depends on who the we is. My rebbein paskin me ikra din. That klisheni is not mavliya, doesn't cause a bliya.
Even if it's yad,
so let us fall. Why not? So, says the Rav, says, you know why? Because not every time meat gets a taste of milk, or milk gets a taste of meat, or kosher gets a taste of treif, is that a halachic problem. Only if it comes through a chalos of bishul or something that's declared equivalent to bishul. Meaning, a tam is only a problem if the tam comes through a chalos of a process that's recognized and defined by chazal, such as bishul. And it has to be done, and therefore, says the Rav, you know what the machloksim Rav and Shmuel is? You think they argue about metzias? I mean, it's a little funny, right? What are they going to argue about? Whether heat rises or heat sinks? They're going to argue about two different theories of chemistry or physics? Right? It's a little tricky. Right? And Oren will tell us, Tainach, if one guy would say Tata Gavar and one guy would say nothing is Gavar. Say it's Gavar a little, and they argue to the line, like we always do. But if one guy says Ilah Gavar and one says Tata Gavar, how is that a Machlokes and Metzias? Right? So it says it's not a Machlokes and Metzias. It's a Machlokes of what's called the Derech, or the process called Bishul that's recognized by the Torah. Rav says the top thing being hot is the definition of the Bishul process. Shmuel says the bottom thing being hot is the definition of the Bishul process. And we pass like Shmuel, the definition of the Bishul process, the bottom thing being hot. It's not that we don't really have a sheet as to what's hot, what's cold. We're not really discussing what's hot, what's cold. We're not even really discussing what tastes like what. We don't care what it tastes like. We care whether the taste was transferred in a recognized process that's a halos of Bishul. Or a halos malicha, etc. And therefore, says the Rav, it's a matter of halos, because, says the Rav, that the definition of bishul, I don't mean bishul means a raisa that you need mamish, but bishul in any sense is the bottom being hot. Okay, that's just the definition. You don't have to ask any scientific questions. It's not scientific, it's just a halos. Okay, if you asked me to swear on a stack of Sifrei Torah that all the Rishonim really meant what the Rav said, I'd be very nervous. but you understand how it's a lot easier to then understand the details.
But even the Rav would think that when the significance of Bishul for these purposes, he got its significance because Bishul enables Havaras Tam. Not necessarily that then, therefore, it's Mugdar Ali.
Maybe.
No, because it's not necessarily difficult to be Mechali in terms of our Gedarim of Bishul by Shabbos and Gedarim of Bishul by Basar Mechalev. And there were some different...
But maybe he would deny that. Okay, yes, lying. By the way, this is true in everything. Like, for example, the Rav also says, what do you think the problem with cooking in a treif kli is just because the Tam transfer in the treif kli? No, it's because there's a chalos in kli midya, and there's a chalos chi of hagol on the kli, and that's what makes it a problem if you cook in a treif kli, etc. What?
Every case that sounds like it's
Ratzias,
that he would always...
Yeah, that was the Rav's Mahalach. Seder. Anyway, that was the Rav's Mahalach. Now we'll see, but like when we get to later on, there are some aspects of Basar Mechalev Horos which are clearly just abstract haluyos. But the Rav's Mahalach was like Hanan and etc. But the Rav's Mahalach was that even the things that just seem like they're arguing as to what gets hot and what gets cold and what tastes like something, what doesn't taste like something, that's not really what they're arguing about. They're really arguing about whether it's a halo special or not a halo special. Okay, here you get into a... by the way, a lot of the Achronim then ask, why don't we just taste it to figure out if it got the taste of milk or meat or get a goy to taste it, right? And they all answer, for the Rav, the answer is obvious. Well, because we don't care if it actually got the taste or not. Even if it does actually taste like meat or milk, it's not a problem. It's not a chalos bishul. But for the more pshat approach, they say, of course you could get a goy to taste it. What we're just saying is that if the bottom was cold, you don't have to bother to get a goy taste it. We're sure there won't be any taste. And if the bottom one is hot, then there might be taste, and you should bother to get a goy taste it. So, what does it mean, betzias? Meaning, what it means is that if tata is cold, we're sure that the taste didn't transfer, except for the outer peel. Right? That's the standard shot. It's Metzias. If the bottom one was hot, it's all hot, the taste might have transferred, and it might all taste like meat and milk. But it might all taste, the guy might taste it all and say it all tastes like Basar Mechalev. He might not, but at least he might. But if the bottom one was cold, as long as you take off the outer peel, we're sure the guy would say, no, the meat tastes like meat, the milk tastes like milk. What are you talking about? We're so sure we don't even bother to check. For the Rav, no, the point is that if tata is cold, then it's mutter even if the taste did transfer. I mean, even if the guy would taste it and say, taka, it tastes like a meat and milk, like I'm used to eating, not like you're used to eating, then it doesn't matter because it didn't transfer in a process that's called a halos bishul, and it's not halachically significant.
How does the
Rav
understand that the maker
of the balak the eklipa? So we'll see. A lot of the achronim, they say that's a chumrim yorbon bialma because it looks bad.
Oh, it's not even.
Oh, the achronim here assume that's a chumra bialma that's not meyakur din. I mean, it's in the Gemara, but it might only be l'chachila, which is where Kav Chomer, they got that sif aleph, if you hold that way. Okay, the Rav would obviously be like the Magen Avraham and the Shach, as opposed to the Taz, then it's only a Chumrah because it looks bad. Okay, now, Agav, the Or HaShulchan, brought up a point which is difficult, which is not difficult for the Rav. Anyone here ever study any science? If I asked you, well, you had a hot thing and a cold thing, and they like mixed into each other, so does it all become hot in the end or does it all become cold? What would you really tell me? It depends on... on the amounts, right? If it was a little hot and a lot of cold, it'll all get cold. If it was a little cold and a lot of hot, it'll all get hot, right? Just take the mass times the temperature and even that out, etc., right? It's a Poisson equation. It's really very Poisson scientifically. It depends on the amounts. Now, of course, that's if it mixes totally. If it only touches a little, then it's much more complicated scientifically. But clearly, it's intuitive. It depends on the amounts, right? If you have a drop of cold milk on a sizzling steak, it'll all be hot. Like, who cares top and who cares top or bottom, right? If you have a drop of hot meat gravy on a cold piece of cheese, of course it'll end up cold because it goes by the amounts. So why don't we care about this? So for the rub, it's easy. Well, it's all a matter of the chalos. We don't really care what's hot and what's cold. We just care the chalos. The chalos is defined in certain derech of the heat being on the bottom. The Aruch HaShulchan is very, very bothered by this because he takes the more mainstream shot. The Aruch HaShulchan says a tremendous chiddush. Says, what if one item is much larger than the other item? So for the Rav, obviously it doesn't matter. Because we're not asking what's really hot and cold, we're asking the chalos. But what are for the mainstream sock? So says the Aruch HaShulchan a tremendous chiddush. Why is this a chiddush? I don't mean it's a chiddush because, like, it doesn't make sense to me. It's a chiddush because the Aruch HaShulchan lived only 100 years ago, and no one said it until him. So, like, if it was true, shouldn't someone have mentioned this until his days? He says, no, so obvious, no one had to mention. Until my days, people got stupid, so I have to mention obvious things. Says the Aruch HaShulchan, of course the larger one wins. The whole machlokes v'ilantatagavar is only if they're equal in size. That's very difficult to read even into the Gemara. That's not the case in the Gemara. It doesn't seem to be the case in the Gemara. Says the Aruch HaShulchan, right here, the Aruch HaShulchan, that the Gadol is Gavar, and Tata is only for two equal amounts. Okay. It makes a lot of sense from a practical perspective. Yeah, the bigger ones go over. The Shulchan Aruch is talking about the same size. It's just like, you think someone should have said that before the Aruch HaShulchan. So here we're really stuck. What's the other option? The Badei HaShulchan says that, right, the problem is no one ever said this. The Badei HaShulchan here answers B'dochek Gadol, and I admit, it's still going to be a little dochek, the whole thing of Tata Gavar. He answers a little bit B'dochek. He says, we're not asking whether the whole thing becomes hot or the whole thing becomes cold. We're asking where the two pieces touch each other and interact. Here, I admit, you can look at the Badei HaShulchan inside. I'm going to say them over in my words, which I hope are no worse than what he intended. But he says, we're not asking whether the whole thing's hot or cold. Obviously, you want to know where the whole thing's hot or cold. Go ask your scientist. We're asking, like, where they touch. If you notice, where two things touch, they're the same size. The amount of A that touches B and the amount of B that touches A are always the same. It sort of has to be that way, right? No matter how big they are, right? If I take a tennis ball and a basketball and I touch them to each other, the amount of tennis ball touching the basketball is the same as the amount of basketball touching the tennis ball because they're touching only on one particular part, right? So he says, where they interact, is that interaction overpowered by the heat or overpowered by the cold? It doesn't mean do they become cold. So what does he say? He says that, no, Tata is always Gavar. Tata is always Gavar. But it doesn't mean that all becomes hot or cold, even in liquids. If I soak a solid in a liquid, the solid touches the liquid as much as the liquid touches the solid. Except the liquid might circulate, so I don't know what to do about that. Then it all becomes hot or cold.
That would be all cases.
Yeah, you're right. Okay, so sorry, Ian. I'm not a good enough scientist. It's a big advantage that I'm not actually trained as a scientist, because then I could always just say, I'm not a good enough scientist, so I'm someone else. I took like one course or something, about two, whatever. I took two physics courses in college. That's it. All right, so that doesn't make me a scientist, does it? No way. Two semesters, 6 credits. I'm definitely not a scientist. And AP chemistry, but I think I'm still not a scientist. By now I can admit, we actually never learned anything whatsoever in AP chemistry. The teacher wasn't in the mood to teach. I just crammed for the AP test the 2 weeks beforehand. So I forgot it all. He told me not to tell the principal, but I think by now it's okay. Doesn't mean that it all became hot or cold, but that where they interact
Bitata rules their interaction. Okay, I'm far from saying that this is a glot explanation. Very far. Saying he's struggling with it. You see how, according to the Rav, you really don't have to struggle with much of anything. And the Tanur Machlokes Metzias, according to the more mainstream shot, you have to struggle with exactly how to explain why we go by Tata, not by what's bigger. The Aruch HaShulchan says we do go by what's bigger, which is wonderful scientifically, but no one ever said that before him or after him. The Baal HaShulchan says it must be, why do we not care what's bigger? So we're not asking whether it all becomes hot or cold. We're asking when it interacts and touches each other, is that interaction field governed by heat or by cold? It's still very dachuk, but
what do you do? The whole thing is still on the bottom, according to the Baal HaShulchan. I mean, then the Maisa is still all about hot.
Lemaisa, the tricky part is, let's say, I understand, the tricky part is if one thing fell on another thing and the bottom one is hot, it goes through the whole thing. So you have to say, so you have to say that maybe somehow the heat is enough to send it through the whole thing, even from one part. I'm just telling you what I found. I'm not claiming that I have a great answer. Okay. I think we're going to have to stop here. I just want to point out that we'll pick up with the famous machlokes in Rabbeinu Tam and the Ritva, although in the parentheses in the Rambam he doesn't quote Rabbeinu Tam, but in Tosos on the Daf, Rabbeinu Tam and the Ritva have a fascinating machlokes. And we'll have to pick up analyzing this next time. Today's Sunday, right? So next time is Tuesday. So let's just tell you what the case is going to be. What if you have cold, let's make it even cold milk, right? That's easier. Cold milk, and into the cold milk falls hot meat. The answer is tata gavar, we paskin, the cold winds, and it's only usher kedei klipa. What does it mean for the meat to be usher kedei klipa? Very simple. Peel off the outer peel of the meat is treif, and the rest of the meat is kosher. What does it mean for the milk to be usher kedei klipa? There is no outer klipa or inner klipa of the milk. So what do you do with the milk? The meat is easy. This is Aser Kedei Klipa. But you obviously can't have Kedei Klipa on the milk. So here we have a machlokes in Tosos. There are other opinions. I'll just point out. In Tosos says Rabbeinu Tam, mutter, because Klipa is not Shayach. It's not Shayach to peel of the milk, so it's mutter. Says the Riva, another Baal Tosos, that you need 60 times the estimated klipa. It's actually pretty easy to estimate what the klipa of the milk is. It's the same as the klipa of the meat. Because where the milk touches the meat touches the milk. You estimate what a klipa of the milk where it touched the meat would be. And if the milk is 60 times that, the klipa is batel b'shishim and mutter. If the milk is only 59 times that, then the klipa is not batel b'shishim and it's treif. So when you have a liquid that can't have a klipa, do you view it as if there is a klipa, which is treif, which I've mixed in, and see if it's more or less than a 60th riva? Or do you just say, that's all mutter, it's not a problem? The Rabbeinu Tam. We'll have to pick up with analyzing that machlokas Samir Tzashem in the next time. So we'll continue with this in next time.
The milk has, in that case, the milk has, like, let's say, strings.